Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget.
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Horses and men. Horses and men are on the field. They didn't yield. Many have fallen here. Never forget. Never forget what they have done. The time will come when it will change.
Have I got?
I'm here, yeah.
Have I got you?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. All right, I have to get a tape. You open up for us?
Yes, okay. Are we on? Yeah, this is the Jackie Patru Show. It's Alan Watt here. And Jackie just popped out to get some things that she needs, and she'll be back in a minute or so. And today is the 13th of July, 2005, and I think we're carrying on today in our talk where we left off yesterday, if we can find the exact place where we did break off. And we're talking about the system that we live in and where it's come from and where it's gone, which is quite something in itself. I should also say at the beginning that I have three books to sell with information on Freemasonry that is not published on books which you can buy from the shelf. I go into the religions as well, the creations of religions, who created them, what they really mean, and how it's been used against the public to control their minds, very effectively, in fact, up to the present time. And so there's three of them, and each one is $25. And if you want them, all you have to do is send $25 in a postal, international postal order to me at Alan Watt, and that's Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, Estaire, Ontario, Canada, and the postal code is P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N for Nora, and 1. That's Site 41, Box 4, Estaire, Estaire, Ontario, P for Peter, 3, E for Elizabeth, 4, N, 1. And I'll get them out as fast as I can. And what I tried to do was to go through how the system works. I even go through the language for the public, so you'll see that your language itself contains meanings within meanings, which the Masons use all the time. Albert Pike himself said, "We never talk so freely as we do amongst the public, because they don't understand what we're really saying." And I show you their codings, which are within the language we use every day. And you'll see it in newspaper headlines and blurbs on the news and all that kind of thing.
Yes, and you got your copies made, didn't you, Alan?
Yes.
And thank you for opening for us, folks. Alan probably already said today is Wednesday, the 13th of July, and it is our last night of our broadcast week, of course. I want to thank all of those of you who are helping to support this broadcast. And if you've written a personal check and noticed that it hasn't been cashed, it is because I am just getting ready to send in the donation money, get it together, and send it into WWCR. So it isn't lost. It is just that I have been really extremely busy. And thank you for... thank you for your support. Thank you for your patience, too, with me. And I want to share our spiritual message tonight. This is a statement attributed to Jesus in Matthew 25, beginning with verse 35. "For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Inasmuch as you have done it unto the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me." And basically, what he's saying is that we are all one. Yes, Alan?
Well, what he's saying is that if you neglect those who are less fortunate as yourself, then eventually that which afflicts them will creep up to you.
Okay, as you sow, so shall you reap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same today as the gasoline goes up and so on. And as always in history, the middle classes are the last ones to scream, because they think, well, I don't care about the ones beneath me who get driven off the road first. I'm okay, until it starts to eat into their budget. And that's why the system is constructed this way. You know, no one stands together on anything.
You know... what that reminds me of, in Flint, Michigan, which is where I was born and raised.
Yeah.
Of course, it was an automotive town for, you know, eons. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, they started closing down. And people at the factories really made very good money.
Yeah.
For those times.
Mm-hmm.
And often there were husbands and wives who both worked at the factory. And they had something on television. I wasn't living there at the time, but there's a documentary on TV about the people who were being laid off their jobs.
Yeah.
And for example, one of the couples that they had were saying that the wife had been laid off, but he still maintained his,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't able to meet their mortgage payment.
Uh-huh.
And they were going to lose their home.
Yeah.
And I was talking to a person, and she said, well, good for them. Maybe it's time they start seeing how the other side lives.
Uh-huh.
In other words, there was no compassion.
Yeah.
And it was just like, well, if we're poor, why shouldn't they be?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen this all through... Europe, which was going through all of the deindustrialization since World War II, the only difference being that it was never admitted to the public that this was an agenda. And so you lived through a misery of constant close downs and unemployment, and of course those who make more than the rest and who think they're indispensable have no compassion on the ones beneath them.
Yeah.
Everyone's been divided, and that's how you rule them. You divide and conquer. You have no cohesion there, you see. And this system is set up deliberately in that fashion so as that it can be taken down at any time. Yeah. And there is no cohesion between the people. And that's very unfortunate. But that's deliberate, too.
Well, that's basically what this this verse tonight from the Bible said.
Yeah. Yeah. And the most amazing thing is that the antidote to all of our ills is in the New Testament. There's no doubts. And it pre-existed the writing of the New Testament. The antidote has always been known. But people won't go there because the antidote is for everyone to help everyone else.
In other words, do unto others.
Yep.
As you would have them do unto you.
Yeah, and have pure faith that if you do give your extra coat to somebody, then when you need one down the road, then someone's going to give one to you.
Yes.
And if people truly followed that system, which was a natural tribal system at one time, there would be no bankers, no money, no debt, no system to rule our lives and dictate to us what we must do. And unfortunately, in the materialistic world, which has been created through the banking system, everyone looks at everyone else to say, well, who's going to go first and try this? You know, try
yes.
this other way.
Yes.
And no one wants to do it.
And they address that very thing in the protocols.
Yeah.
Knowing human nature. That bringing people into the materialistic system.
Yes.
Where the more stuff you have, the more, quote, oh, I guess you're supposed to be happier.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's a multi-millionaire. And I actually feel sorry for this person. In fact, I used to work for him, but he, I talked to him one day. He had just gotten a new condo in Nevada, a penthouse thing. And he said he was sitting there surveying his kingdom.
Yeah.
And he has, I suppose his friends, and he's actually had pictures taken with Poppy Bush and lots of movie stars, and that's his life. And he, I don't know, do you think he thinks he's happy?
I'm sure he thinks he's supposed to be happy, because that's what everything gears you up to, is that the more you have, then the less worries in the material world you should have, so therefore, technically, you're supposed to be happy, And, of course, that's not true, because this is an artificial system we live in. There's nothing natural about anything. And, in fact, the whole commercial system runs on the fact that people are not happy. And that's why they can sell all kinds of gadgetry to the public on the premise that if you buy this, you're going to be happy. If people truly were happy, the system would fall apart by itself. And we'd buy no more and say, gee, I've actually got all I need. Or all I want, you see.
Yes.
So, no, it's all a big lie, and it's not a natural system. It's a system that was developed thousands of years ago by, let's just say, beings that observed humanity for long enough to decide how to take it over. And it was taken over through very clever means, looking at the weaknesses of the male and the weaknesses of the female and exploiting them. That's how you take over. You exploit those weaknesses, you know. And you dangle beads in front of the woman, etc. And then you dangle the woman with the beads in front of the male. And that's when status comes in and superiority. And I'm better than the guy next to me. I've got all this wealth. And that's how the whole darn thing was done. If we look at ancient tribes, for instance, it's recorded even in the writings of Tacitus of Rome that the European tribes, the chiefs who were elected, by the way, had no more property or personal valuables than the average tribesman. They had no more. So the money system itself creates the greed, creates the class divisions. And of course it also enables those who run the system to then take back in money, which represents your labor, taxes. That's how they do it. So they get the world working for them under the guise of you working for yourself. You're actually working for them when 40% or more of your labor goes back to them in taxes.
Alan?
Yes?
In your book, and I had this as a question I wanted to ask you. You had told us about Sparta.
Yeah.
In the past, and how Sparta, the people live. Excuse me. Okay, I didn't know if the girls were playing or scrapping. You had told us about a system where the men were warriors,
mm-hmm.
and they actually had to, you know, become, they had to be in the army.
Yeah.
And that they weren't able to live with their wives and and stuff like that. They, you know, it was all common, you know, they ate together and lived together. And in your book, you talk about Sparta, and this isn't, I'm not challenging, I want you to explain this, that you said the Spartans had been at one time a healthy, wholesome people in total control of their own affairs, and you used it as an example. They had their own monetary system, et cetera.
Yeah.
Well, was that an earlier time?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so it was after they got into the monetary system that they got so nuts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every country had been taken over by bankers from Asia Minor, basically, who would come in. And the merchant bankers were that. They were merchants and bankers in one. And they dangled their goods there and introduced their silver and said, well, if you accept this coinage, in other words, and then repay us the next time in the same coinage, you can buy more stuff. So they were introducing their money system everywhere they went. And Sparta, it initially allowed some of them in, and the king, Lycurgus, noticed that every other country that allowed this became servants to these bankers. They were all in debt. Every citizen was taxed to death. Property was confiscated, and so on. And so he kicked them all out, and reestablished the traditional means of exchange which they'd used, which was basically iron. And the iron that they used was tempered in such a way that you couldn't even cut it. And then you reuse it for anything else. It was solely for money. And no one else wanted it, but they were self-sufficient, so they used it internally, and it functioned very well. Yeah.
So what you told us about them, were they were almost slaves to the government. Well, they were. That was later after.
That was later, because they went through such prolonged warfare for many, many years, fighting the countries that had already been taken over. See, once the countries were taken over by the bankers then put their own men in to advise the tyrant to create standing armies and train them, and then they gave them the money to supply them with armaments, and then they would send them off on conquest to on their neighbors. In other words, those countries which had not yet accepted the money. So they tried that with Sparta too, and Sparta fought for years and kept winning all the time. And they threw many, many other nations' armies against them, but the Spartans kept winning. But through it all, they lost so many men that eventually, and they captured so many people that they used as slaves, that they began to get debauched themselves. That's what warfare does to people in a prolonged fashion. So warfare is, even though you're winning the war in a sense, in a defensive way, you still become debauched, because you still have to have grain growing and farming done and all the rest of it. And when all the men are off fighting, then once you start using slaves, then you're going down the same path as the very people that you're fighting against. You know.
And I noticed that you said in here, that when they began, you know, the bankers began getting a toehold, you said along with treaty loans came the usual, this is today, but that was way back then. What is the timeline here?
Well, the Spartans eventually had to give in and admit.
I know, but that around what is the just general timeline?
Yeah, they had to basically give in and admit defeat around 350 BC or so.
Okay, that long ago.
Uh-huh.
And you said here, and we know that this is so by our own experience today,
mm-hmm.
along with treaty loans came the usual pornography,
yeah.
narcotics,
mm-hmm.
expensive wines,
yeah.
and deviant sexual practices.
Yeah.
Everywhere they go.
Yes.
Everywhere they go.
Yeah, they found so many clay tablets even of pornography
yeah.
and intercourse and postures and all this stuff. And they've found it all the way from Babylon on the trade routes. And they've even found them in the Aegean Sea where ships were sunk, that there was whole boatloads of what was then pornography, wine, and drugs as well, because they did have trade with India and carried opium all over the place. It's the same technique. It's been here for thousands of years.
And that's why this international priesthood
mm-hmm.
that has been around for eons
yeah.
so well knows basic human nature.
Absolutely. There's no creature more studied on the planet than man and woman. In minute detail. And that's why human behavior is predictable if you put forth a sequence or as though pushing buttons. A certain sequence will produce a certain reaction from the public, and it will always produce the same reaction if produced in the same way.
And I want our listeners to know that what you mentioned about the pornography,
uh-huh.
there is a photocopy here in the book, a picture of one of the clay tablets
mm-hmm.
of what you're talking about
yeah.
In a sexual position.
Mm-hmm.
Do you care if I read one paragraph here?
Carry on, yeah.
Carry on. Carry on.
Yep.
This is after Sparta. I want our listeners to hear this. The reason for dwelling on Sparta is because it is perhaps one of the most clear examples of how countries fall. We're talking B.C. here, folks, but all the way through, of course, of how countries fall one by one to tried and proven methods of subversion by a determined group of men of secrecy, a special brotherhood with a cunning and totally ruthless something at the top, something with almost incredible intellect and knowledge of human behavior, something which plans the future many centuries in advance. That's that which it calls progress, nothing more than a business plan for the entire world. There have been many Spartas down through the ages, with ever-increasing mass slaughter of peoples as this dark, quote, thing gets closer and closer to its goal. Not one generation has been allowed freedom from war for the last few hundred years, especially in Europe. And boy, it's just like you're describing today, Alan.
Uh-huh.
And this thing... Mm-hmm. What is this thing in your mind? What is this dark thing?
This thing...
It's almost out of this world.
It's a combination. It's almost a mosaic, you might say.
Would you define mosaic for me, please?
A mosaic is that which is made up of different parts, which make the whole, like a jigsaw puzzle.
Okay.
And so certainly there's no doubt whatsoever here in the world we have different strata of humanity working towards a destination which openly declares the elimination of the majority of the rest of humanity. These people who are at the top of this are extremely wealthy because money has always been the key to everything in an economic system. We are actually classified as human cattle and producers.
Oh, yes.
In this system.
The word capital, as a matter of fact, came from the word chattel.
yeah.
Seattle,
uh-huh.
and Capital.
Yeah. And even the stock market, the stock was the cattle and market.
Oh, my God, like
the
stock.
The cattle market.
Like, oh, my God, Alan.
Yes.
Like the stockyards.
That's exactly where it came from.
Oh, yeah. My God.
So we are the laborers. We are the stock market, you see. Everything in this system is artificial and deviant, actually. See, anything which isn't natural is therefore deviant. And the deviants are running the world. And not only running the world, they've trained everyone who's born into this system that this is all quite natural. And that money is natural, and 12 or 13 banking families control the world, and that's somehow quite natural, too. So then we're trained through our schooling system to go out there and produce for them and pay 40% or more of your taxes back to them so that they can then keep in power and create a system of power which cannot be broken because they buy armaments and all the rest of it to take care of their own system. So money is the key. Money itself is a deviant creation.
And taxes are a deviant creation.
Absolutely, yeah.
Totally.
See, taxes at one time were called fees from few, from the Norman word few, for feudal, you see. So feudal, you had fee, and you had to pay your fee to the lord. And so they changed it from that to taxes. Now, to tax someone means to labor, you see. You tax yourself, you're laboring yourself.
Yes.
So taxing is simply taking away so much of your time, energy, and work and giving it to, or actually stealing it from you and giving it to them. And that's how the system keeps itself in power.
So taxes are so taxing.
Yes.
On our energy.
Absolutely.
Because that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. That's what it is. That's what taxes mean. They take from you that which would be useless to them unless it was their system, and that is money. So they dish it out there so that we all run like little trained rats to grab the money. We pull levers all day long in the factory, and then we get a seed at the end of it, or we get a paycheck. It's the same Pavlovian principle. And then they take so much of it back from us. But by this token, they can hire as many as they want of us to work for them, for their agenda, and even create the weaponry and the scientific structure to maintain a superpower over the public of the world. And that's exactly how they keep control of it all. But money is a deviant thing, it's a deviant creation. And those who run the system are the deviant creation.
And what we as individuals can do
mm-hmm.
is everything within our ability and power to do, not to become part of the system.
Yes.
I mean, in order to, oh my God, you know, the ID. If you're caught on the street today without an ID.
Yeah, uh-huh.
of some type, you're going to be probably termed a terrorist, Alan.
Yep, and when you tell them, well, I had no ID, or no idea, that won't hold up anymore.
No.
Yeah.
No, it wouldn't. We have to take our break here.
Yeah.
Folks, if you would have your pen in your hand, and you will get my address for those of you who would like to help to keep this broadcast on the air. We are in our 8th year of listener-sponsored broadcasting. That's a miracle. You are a miracle, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back with Alan Watt.
What in the world is going on? Stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com to find out first. And on satellite at Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Yeah. government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Roll away the dove.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
While this is on my mind, folks, I would like to acknowledge Nicholas at WFAR, First Amendment Radio, Internet Radio. It has been a long time since we have sent a payment to Nicholas for our broadcasting time. And so we are on the Internet because of his generosity. And I want to thank Nicholas and hope, folks, that you do support at least WFAR by subscribing to the so that you can get the broadcasts and go into their archives and listen. And I in fact encouraged Nicholas to make a commercial so that you all would know that tapes of the broadcast are available and other broadcasts that are on WFAR, hoping that at least it would carry some of the financial cost of keeping Sweet Liberty on the Internet. And this really is for those of you who are Internet listeners who have access to the Internet. It would be a way that you could show your appreciation. Because I will say this, because the very backbone of this broadcast has been and is still today our shortwave listeners, whatever money comes in for the broadcast goes to WWCR, the shortwave station. And I just wanted to make that clear to you. Alan, thanks for your patience here. Hon.
Yes, if I can go off the track for a minute and mention something.
Oh, go anywhere you want, my
okay,
dear.
Okay, I need advice on something here.
Oh, what?
Yep, because you know how I've been getting trouble photocopying the stuff I write?
Yeah.
Well, today I was making up a master or copy on my little single photocopy machine.
Uh-huh.
You know, and a tiny piece of plastic bust, which held a spring on it, and that was the end of that, you know. So what I want to know is there anything out there that isn't too expensive that can actually be used for some sort of desktop publishing so that I can do my own prints and so on a fairly large scale that isn't too expensive and doesn't require a lot of...
A large outlay
of...
Yeah. Alan?
Yeah?
You are asking the wrong person, but you know what?
Mm-hmm.
You've put this out there.
Yeah.
And folks, what I want you to... first of all, let me give you Alan's phone number. He may have given it to you already, but I want to do it again. It is 9-6, yes, Alan?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. 0416. Alan's phone number, any of you who have some information for him, there could be one of you out there who has equipment that you're not using that you might like to donate, except I need for Alan to be a little bit more clear on what it is he's looking for. But his phone number for you to get a hold of him is 705. That's in Canada. And by the way, Alan,
yeah,
I think this is very telling, and I will come back to your phone number.
Uh-huh.
This new long-distance service I have.
Yes, with the one.
Uh-huh. Skynet.
Yeah.
I want our listeners to know this. Well, it's the service isn't, the calls, as you know, are not all that really crisp and clear, but it's $23.95 a month.
Uh-huh.
For unlimited long distance, and it does go to quite a few other countries.
Yep.
It's Skynet. But anyway, folks, listen to this. When I have to dial, see, we can't get long distance service here where I live in the Boons because of our little small phone company. But anyway, I was able to get this, and when I have to dial a toll-free number and then dial my phone number, and it says, "Welcome to Skynet. Remember, for calls within the U.S., dial 1 before your call. For international calls, dial 011. And we only have to dial 1 for Canada. Alan, what the heck is that telling us?
Well, we are all
for calls within the U.S.
Sure.
Anyway, I wanted our listeners to know that.
Uh-huh.
And if you are interested in this service, if you can't get unlimited long distance, it's Skynet.com, I think, folks. And Steve Olson sent me that information. And Steve, if you're listening, thank you. Now back to Alan's phone number, folks. 705-596.
No, 695.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry about that. I haven't slipped like that in a long time. 705-695-0416. I never have trouble dialing your number.
Yeah.
705-695-0416 if you want to call Alan. Now, Alan, exactly again, what is it?
Well, I've had so much trouble with the companies, the regular chains like Staples and so on.
Yeah. Out of this world trouble.
Literally out of this world trouble.
Yeah.
Destroying master copies and everything.
The machines.
Yeah, that's right. and the people doing crazy things, certainly.
Yeah.
I'm almost paranoid to put my stuff out there. No Mason is going to print this stuff because I disclosed the real truth about masonry, not the bookstore shelf type thing you can buy. I go much deeper than that.
Yes.
But no Mason is going to print this. And so what I need is something which can do multiple copies so I'm not standing all day making one copy for one person.
Well, you know what, it seems to me like you need a duplexer too.
Uh-huh.
Either that or, in other words, duplexing means having both sides of the page copied.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That could be an expensive piece of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
When I owned my business, we had in fact, I bought it particularly for this stuff.
Uh-huh.
That would do duplexing and collating and et cetera.
Yeah.
Collating is putting the pages in the order.
Mm-hmm.
Those machines are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
But you can, if you had one that gave you nice, crisp, clean copies,
uh-huh,
you could always feed the pages in,
yeah,
turn them over, put them back in,
mm-hmm,
and feed them through the other side.
Yeah.
And you could do that, and it would still be time-saving.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, folks, this is what Alan's question was. And if there is anybody out there that has some suggestions for him, or as I said, maybe a piece of equipment that you're not using, maybe you would give him a call. Once again, the number is 705-695-0416. I had a lovely copy machine donated to me back in about 94, Alan, and
yeah,
it doesn't duplex or anything like that, but it is a really, well, right now it needs a new drum, but but it is a nice machine. And it was donated.
Yes.
And people are very generous when they appreciate what you're doing. And
yeah. Well, if I had something like that, I could churn out a book a month, you know.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But that's the problem. I take my stuff into the stores. They see these symbols and so on. Everything goes crazy. The machines break down. They shred your master copies.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up walking out with a box full of shredded material.
Yeah.
And that's happened. That's actually happened.
You know, who's to say that maybe some wealthy person could be listening to this broadcast that would be willing to set you up with something like that.
Yeah, because I certainly am not wealthy. I could be if I wanted to go back into the world, for sure, but I scrape by like many people, you know. And I donate a lot of time to what I'm doing.
Yes, you do. Yeah. Pat called last night, Patrick, and he wanted to know if you would be willing to give us a little bit of a little bit of a bio on yourself so they get a sense of who is Alan Watt.
Yeah. Well, I won't go too far into credentials except to say, I certainly did have a profession that was sort of highly regarded, and I walked away from it, and I was qualified and so on. I then went into music and did a lot of session work in studios, and I also formed groups to play musicals, live musicals, and I also did classical guitar solo on stage across Europe.
Didn't you build your own guitar?
Yes, oh yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah, I did.
Yep, so I did all that too, and I walked away from that again, and I made a fair bit of money at the time. I also walked away from a marriage and left the money with it, and I didn't care because I thought I could do it all again if I wanted to. But then I chose a different path, and I'm glad I did, you know. Because the path of learning, I'd learned all I had to learn by meeting powerful people and seeing how culture is created by certain individuals who are trained from birth, basically, in culture creation of music or movies or stage plays and so on. So I mixed with that crew, and I could see them working. And I knew it was not haphazard. I knew there was a direction to all of it. No matter what country you went into, the same things were happening culture-wise in every single country. Which told me there was a guiding hand behind this, and that those who created the culture and altered culture were all in cahoots together from some central source. And of course, we know that is true today. Truly, there is no grassroots culture.
No grassroots.
As Plato said, 2,350 years ago, he said, "We give the people their culture. We give the people." We control the mechanisms of culture. He said we give them music, the type of music, and he said so we need the music industry. That's what he called it. He said we also use the fashion industry, which goes along with it, and we also use the acting industry, and it hasn't changed today. And he said the people see these things and emulate what they see. And the fashions that are worn, they mimic them. They want the same clothing, etc. So this was understood thousands of years ago, and it's so much so that Plato said that music, especially since it can affect the young, to go to any lens of either ecstasy or rebellion, he said, music should be licensed, and musicians that are very good at their art. Should be licensed because he knew the power that it could have on the young, especially. And he says we can use the youth for rebellion simply by the type of music we give them. And this is 2,350 years ago. and nothing has changed except that you have massive studios all interconnected, a massive industry that throws people in front of you, builds them up, and tells you that they're stars, and they don't even have to have any talent at all, you know, because the equipment is so fantastic. Anybody can sing through it and sound great. All you need is someone to act or mime, and they're an instant star.
Well, so, I remember when you told us that.
Uh-huh.
That they just choose the people to put them out front.
Uh-huh.
And that maybe the best really talented ones are at home.
Yes.
But I'll tell you when that really. I didn't disbelieve you, but there are certain times you say things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't discard it or reject it, but I don't necessarily accept it as, oh, okay, that because Alan said it.
Yeah.
But what I was flipped on the TV one night, and they were having one of those Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis telethons.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
This lady walked out on the stage, and she had on a long, full skirt, kind of long. She had boots on, and she was singing Nancy Sinatra's song.
Okay. Uh-huh.
These boots are made for walking.
Uh-huh.
I felt so sorry for this woman. I thought, oh, my God,
mm-hmm.
She can't even carry a tune. Who in the world is that? And then Jerry Lewis said, come over here and sit in Uncle Jerry's lap. And it was Nancy Sinatra.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
She was heavier, so I didn't recognize her looks. But Alan, she couldn't even carry a tune.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, many of them are like that. Marianne Faithfull, that used to be with the Rolling Stones, or Mick Jagger, was the same. She was always discordant, and so she was tone deaf, in fact. You know.
Who is this?
Marianne Faithfull.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's many like that.
What song? Just give me one song she sang.
Oh, I can't even remember.
Oh, okay, because I remember the name, but
yeah,
I don't recall.
They were so pitiful that they're not worth remembering.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're talking about giving us the culture through music,
mm-hmm.
you see the children today opting into the black culture.
Yes, sir.
It's actually African.
Yeah. Well, you know something, it's even beyond Africa.
It is, isn't it, Alan?
It's beyond Africa.
It was made up.
In Africa, they had some talent, but the stuff that they've used the blacks to promote is a scientific, sub-primitive type of music, which is beyond, way before Africa. And I was listening to one rap artist who went downhill on drugs and alcohol and the high life, and he said, you know, he says, we walked into a studio when we first started with a clean, decent song. He said, and I've seen this happening because I used to work in that kind of field. But he said, by the time they'd finished with the song, they'd rewritten everything, and there was Kill Cops, there was, you know, Screw You, and all this kind of stuff in it.
Uh-huh.
And they became instant hits. He says, you know, and they get, and their image was made for them. You know, you'll wear your baggy pants down to here, etc. He says, but that wasn't how we even started. But that's what those who control the industry wanted, you see.
So in other words,
mm-hmm.
and yes, it occurs to me, and I didn't even think about it, it wasn't the blacks who really thought up
uh-huh.
these baggy pants and
yeah.
wearing the hats backwards. It was given to them.
Yeah.
And then the white children
mm-hmm.
and all of the races
mm-hmm.
are mimicking it. And,
yeah.
and you know, the thing that gets me is that the parents go along with this and allow it.
Yes. Yeah.
We have a phone call here. Hello?
Jackie?
Yeah?
I don't know if you're taking a phone call. This is Kate.
Hi, Kate. We'll take your phone call, my dear.
It's Alan. I'm very disturbed. I heard on a program earlier... Do they have a human rights tribunal in Toronto, Canada?
You'll have to hang up to hear him, honey.
Yeah, I know.
But do you want... Okay, Alan, you heard her. Do they have a human rights tribunal in Canada?
I heard a man
concerning
call
what?
Just a minute.
...about a restaurant owner that was put up before that tribunal because he refused to advertise gay marriages. I mean, have we come to the point that Edgar Bronfman, the Jew that runs Canada and promotes homosexuality, is it coming to the United States? And I'll hang up.
Kate, did you say you heard that on a news cast or a radio broadcast, honey? Oh, she's hung up.
Yeah.
All right. Did you hear, did she say she heard it on a radio broadcast or a news broadcast, Alan?
I didn't catch that part, but I mean, it is illegal not to take advertising from these communities, as they call them. If you're a printer or whatever you happen to be, and you deny them access to your facilities, and you will not print their material, then yeah, you will be fined or imprisoned or whatever.
Okay, I thought she said a restaurant owner.
Yeah, that could make sense. Sure.
Wouldn't promote gay marriage.
Yeah.
And went before the Human Rights Tribunal in Canada.
Uh huh. I don't see how a restaurant, though, has anything to do with promoting gay marriage.
Yeah, did she say restaurant
owner? I think so.
Okay. Yeah. But, okay, her basic question is, do you know if there's a human rights tribunal in Canada?
Yeah, it's the wrong term for it, because it's not human rights, it's the agenda's rights. And it's called political correctness. The term political correctness in English is the direct translation from the term they used in Soviet Union, because that's what they went through, and that's why we call it political correctness. We have it here now, of course, and it's mandated. This is what you will think, and this is what you must say, and don't you dare say anything to the contrary. This is, of course, freedom and democracy.
Yes.
Yeah. So no, democracy, it's so farcical that these people who claim that they have no, that they're not bigoted and anything can go because they don't care, anybody should be able to worship whatever they want or do whatever they want, but when you go against their agenda, they certainly show you that they're utter liars, because they'll come down on you for your beliefs, you know. They're utter hypocrites. Under the guise of complete liberalism, they will destroy you, they will annihilate you,
yeah.
Because they're more intolerant than any other system that's ever been existed, basically. Yeah. But that is their system.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going back to the parents here.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it is so important for parents to, who know this, understand this, and hopefully our listeners are sharing this information with their children so that the children understand how they're being used, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
For example, gay rights.
Yeah.
I've made it clear to my grandchildren there's mm-hmm. nothing gay about homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
Now they act like, oh, it's great today and it's normal. There's nothing normal about it.
Mm-hmm.
The human body wasn't even made that way. For
well, what gets me is that all children, as they're going through puberty, feel awkward, male and female. You watch them moving, even you can tell they feel and look awkward, and they're trying to sort out who they are in this big scheme of things, which is artificial to begin with, And here you have counselors saying, well, maybe you're homosexual.
That's right.
And they'll also tell them, well, maybe if you haven't tried it, then you're inhibited.
Thank you. You know, thank you for bringing this up, because I received a call from a listener last night,
mm-hmm.
and he said it's never going to fly. It's just not natural.
Yeah.
And I said I didn't want to get in a debate.
Uh-huh.
I just said they are pushing it down the children's throat.
Yeah.
And I recall hearing this on, I think it was the news, not mm-hmm. on TV, but radio,
yeah.
when a 12-year-old boy, seventh grader,
uh-huh.
He was told after an assessment test or whatever they do, psychological testing at school,
uh-huh.
that he was homosexual.
Yes. Sir.
And they asked him, how do you feel
mm-hmm.
to find out that you're homosexual? He said, I don't know, because I didn't know I was one.
Exactly.
But the fact that from grade school, from kindergarten today, they are promoting this. Homosexuality is a normal, healthy way of being. There's nothing wrong or unnatural about it. Well, these children are in such a formative stage, and today children have been given and shoved down their throats so much pornography that sex has become meaningless.
Well, this is what people have to understand. Nothing in society and cultural change comes from the public. It comes from a system that's changing direction to the next part of their system. And what it is that they want to create a world, and Plato talked about it thousands of years ago, they want to create a world where they're perfect slaves.
Well, they're doing
and they're going to clone these slaves, you see. But step by step, you have to get to the cloning stage. And that can only be done when the public have no conception of what normality is anymore.
And of course, they're doing it, give us the young. Give us the young, and within a generation, we can change the world. And that's exactly, and I hope my caller last night is listening to this, because I just wasn't in the mood to go into it. And we're almost out of our hour again, but you shared something with me. There was a documentary on, I believe, you know, CBC, and these young people, and they were wearing the tongue buttons or whatever.
Yeah, the chains and the little...
And a young girl, 12 or 13 years old, I think they were... I know this is sensitive, but it was regarding oral sex. And she said, it's nothing.
It's nothing,
It's nothing.
It's like Bill Clinton, I did not have sex with that woman. Technically, he was using newspeak, as you would say.
All right. Well, Alan, once again, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure, as always.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, have a lovely 4 days off from this broadcast, and we'll be back with you on Monday. And I'm hoping tomorrow, Alan, that the rest of the garden is going to be totally finished. It hasn't rained yet, and they promised us. And
oh, well, if they promised it, they'll give it to you.
Yeah, but not yet.
Okay.
Okay, you have a lovely time with your guests.
You too.
Give them my regards.
I will.
Okay, good night.
Good night.
And good night, ladies and gentlemen. Be back Monday. God bless you.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.